right, welcome to the Front Row Network. Today we're going to do our Memorial Day special. And as always, we try to get a couple veterans on when we do our Memorial Day special, because we're going to break down Hacksaw Ridge today. So as you enter this busy weekend during this time of a coronavirus pandemic, all itching to get together with our families, we're obviously thinking about our teachers, thinking about our healthcare specialists, but we don't want to forget that Monday, May 25th is Memorial Day. We do want to take time out and thank and pay our respects to those service members who fell in the line of duty. And since we talk about movies here, we want to talk about Hacksaw Ridge, which tells the story of one heroic medic went into battle without a weapon. But today, my guests are Aaron McCabe and Ian Flug, who is also an infantry veteran. So how are you guys doing?
Doing good, thank you.
I am excited and honored to be on with you two veterans yourselves in this podcast. So let's take a moment for the listeners and for you guys to also thank Ian and Jay for their service. Here from the front.
I forgot to introduce myself while I was busy introducing you guys.
Yeah.
So just to cue everybody in, I picked Hacksaw Ridge for a couple reasons. One, I saw it for the first time this year. We kind of talked before. It kind of blew me away in the fact that I think it's a weird movie, and I really liked it. But I also think the story of Desmond Doss is absolutely amazing. In this movie, with everything about it that's so far-fetched, the fact that the story that it told, everything I could look up about it, it sounded like it was pretty spot on with the accuracy of what he actually did, which makes it all the more amazing. So I, just quick bit information, just want to see what you guys just generally thought of this movie. Aaron, what was your just overall first take on this movie?
Okay, so you've got two veterans on here talking about a war movie and one crybaby. So the first 2 minutes, I was like, this is too much for me as far as war goes. But I really felt moved by this story. I've had the same sentiments of like, there are some very over the top ridiculous aspects to it. And there were some like kind of confusing aspects, but overall by the end of the movie, like my eyes are puffy from crying. Like it really did move me. Hit the story of Desmond Doss. I was like, I'm blown away by this kind of heroics. So that's, I loved it, and I'd recommend it to anybody to see.
Ian, what were your initial thoughts on this movie?
Just give me expended brass, like falling out of a weapon, and I'm good. But I really liked it. Like Aaron said, very moving, extremely moving. You know, this guy, Desmond Doss, is, first of all, has an amazing name. And then to go on and do all that, just an extreme example of hero. And I enjoyed the movie.
All right. So what I first want to do is just brief synopsis of this movie. And if people aren't familiar with Desmond Doss's story, the movie's really almost two halves. The first half is his want to join the service, and gives a little bit of background and history to Desmond, followed by the second half, which is where he earned his Medal of Honor. And that's just some quick terminology for some of the listeners out there. Often you hear people describe Medal of Honor winners. And I know this was driven into Ian's head. Nobody wins medals in the service. You earn them. Because nobody wins when there's that much violence and that much death. But this movie focuses on his heroics that earned him that Medal of Honor. And what I want to do is just kind of talk about the first half of the movie with everybody, and then we'll move into the really over-the-top war scene at the Battle of Hacksaw Ridge. So with the first half, Ian, where we're getting the background on Desmond, we're learning more about him. What was your kind of take on that? Because to me, it seemed like the way Mel Gibson filmed this was that it was kind of that look we have at the greatest generation. It's their this perfect generation. They're, you know, it's all kind of reminded me of 1940s, 1950s movies where the acting's a little melodramatic. But what was your take on that and the story itself?
I mean, Vince Vaughn stole the show. Like, I don't even know if I would like this movie if Vince Vaughn wasn't in it. And then Hugo Weaving's another one that I hope we talk about. But I just loved him, like, eating the guys up. What does he say to that, like, gangly-looking dude? He's like, how long have you been dead? I mean, it's something like that. I just...
Yeah.
I love what he does with that character because there's some, like, regular Vince Vaughn in there. Go ahead.
No, you were cutting out a little bit. That's, just keep going.
Oh, sorry. No, there's you can tell it's like Vince Vaughn at his core, but he's in a completely different setting from ever before, at least that I've seen him in. And then he gets to have fun ripping some guys apart a little bit, and then he's coming across like all these different problems like we see in all the Basic Training movies. But I do find it interesting that almost like Full Metal Jacket, it is two different. There's two halves for sure. There's like a Basic Training scene, and then there's mm-hmm. the stuff.
Yeah. Aaron, what are your thoughts on some of that?
In the first half?
The first half.
I actually didn't appreciate, I think, Vince Vaughn's performance as much. And I think why that is, Ian, is because to me, I was really comparing that Basic Training scene to Full Metal Jacket. I think because, and when you've seen Full Metal Jacket and like have been indoctrinated with Full Metal Jacket, and then you see that, it's so vanilla. And understandably so, because this movie was not trying to be Full Metal Jacket, but I think it seemed like tepid to me, knowing that like it's a little bit more intense. So I almost felt like Vince Vaughn's performance in that first half was like contrived. Like he was trying to be the mean guy and like the drill sergeant, but it seemed like he was holding back. However, Hugo Weaving's performance, I'm with you on that. I'd love to talk about that. And he drove the first half for me. And through how they weaved him in throughout, because what I think this movie does really well, or that I was also moved by besides his Desmond Doss's story, is how they touched on the effects of PTSD from wars.
Yeah, I have
and everything and all these other aspects.
Yeah, I have that down in my notes as well. Some of the things from that first half that stood out to me was the hospital scene where he's in the hospital and he meets his future wife, and he helped the boy who got hurt, and you know, he just clicked, man. He helped him. But as he's looking around, he's seeing all these nurses and all these doctors help these people. And he had that epiphany moment. I know what I have to do. I thought that was really cool how they shot that, where just he knew his purpose and how he could, or he thought he knew how he could serve his country still. So I really liked that scene. But with the, I want to talk Vince Vaughn, then I want to talk Hugo Weaving. With the Vince Vaughn, the thing, I get what you're saying, Aaron, because all mm-hmm. basic training scenes are compared to Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
I actually thought his performance worked well in the first half because the first half of this movie, to me, I would describe it as a little corny and a little melodramatic.
Corny.
With all the actors. But I think it was intentional. I don't think it was like, oops, we made this really melodramatic thing. I think it was a thing he was, I think he was really trying to show Desmond Doss's personality and how he looks at the world, a little bit naive, a little bit corny, but sweet. But with Hugo Weaving's character and little Vince Vaughn, they drive in. There's still a little edge there. Mm-hmm. And the scene with Hugo Weaving, especially the dinner scene when Desmond's older brother walks in that uniform, man, that's a tough one not to lose it yourself, watching him fall apart, talking about his buddy's guts spilling out. I mean, very, very vivid language. But I also think what that first half did for me was drive into you where Desmond was coming from when he wanted to be a medic, and that he absolutely was against violence of any sort. Mm-hmm. And I think they did a good job of that. But That was the thing, was that melodrama. That's where I could see people like, this is a little hokey. This is a little corny. But for me, it really worked for me. But Ian, what were your thoughts on Hugo Weaving's character as Desmond Doss's father?
Well, first of all, it sucks that he's allowed to like physically abuse his wife and do all that horrible stuff to her and the family. But
yeah,
obviously, you know, different time, whatever, still not acceptable. But I could really appreciate, like, I felt a lot of his scenes. I felt his scenes more than probably anyone else's until maybe the end with Desmond Doss, like the real Desmond Doss. But, you know, I just loved how what'd the wife say? She hates himself more than anyone else. And that's just so real because, you know, the whole, you're never mad at anyone. You're only really mad at yourself. I love that. And then it really just comes to fruition in that character.
Yeah, that scene was so palpable at the dinner table when, like, of course the abuse that he and everything that he was spilling onto his family, but it's like you're saying, like, you're mad at yourself, you're hurt, and he's bleeding all over everybody else. He's hurting his children, he's hurting his wife, he's hurting himself by drinking, and how much of that is unresolved trauma from his experiences in the war. And I think that's a very real scenario for a lot of people. But that man, that dinner scene was like visceral, because I felt like it also kind of showcases like men don't get a lot, and didn't back then, especially more so now, but like have a lot of emotional literacy and the availability to like really feel their feelings. So like, here's this man who's been through all this and his only channel is like anger. And then now his son is sitting in front of him going through potentially the same thing. And he's just, you can see through his anger and talking about his partner who died so vividly, like it's hurt and fear. And so, yeah, that I loved that scene. I also cried during it. So
oh, yeah.
Just in case.
No, that one was heavy, man. Hugo carried it. But you're right. I think what's interesting too is it's a part of some of the World War I, World War II movies I don't think is shown enough, is that PTSD element. I mean, I think we are still dealing with generations spawned from our World War I and World War II vets coming home and not knowing how to deal with stuff. Yeah. You know, that's where I think a lot of the, well, I don't need to get help. That's where I think a lot of that attitude comes from, is just generation after generation, just passing it down. Mm-hmm. More because of ignorance than anything. You know, I don't think any of these people were bad people. It was an ignorance and not, like you said, not knowing how to deal with those emotions. And the fact that they showed it in a World War II movie is pretty refreshing, because they show glimmers of it. You know, they don't show you the full on. They don't show you that is what affected Desmond and caused him to behave the way he did with his time in service.
I think the movie does a good job of, when we talk about the second half, even in the second half, kind of showing that, like, we're so excited to get out there and serve our country, and then seeing what it's actually like and seeing on their faces, like, just the, like, to see, like, you know, they're going to have PTSD, they're going to have trauma, they're going to have vicarious trauma through this, because how do you go through something like that without having it? And especially these types of wars.
Yeah. And I, before we move on from that scene, I wanted to say that when the older son comes in with the uniform on and sits down, like I put myself in his shoes, you know, getting the uniform is just, you feel amazing, you know, and then a year later, you're a guy making fun of someone like that. But it's just, it's, you know, you want to take as many selfies as possible and just show everyone like, this is who I am now. So I thought that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, you're proud.
One thing with that scene too, that I'll highlight, just reflecting on my service, you know, he was very, their father was very adamant that he did not want them to join. And I signed up for the Army the beginning of my senior year. So I did what's called the delayed entry program. Ian, did you go through that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was signed up a year before I graduated high school. So I was 17. I may have been 16. I was 17. And my dad was like, he didn't want to sign the paperwork. And But I'm me, so I was like, well, you can sign it, and I can get myself, you know, move up the pay scale a little bit by the time I get in. Or you can not sign it, and then I can turn 18, and then I can sign it, and then I'll just be behind. So take your pick. Either way, it's happening. But my dad, you know, we were in two wars. So I signed up, and it would have been August of 2003 is when I signed the tentative paperwork to join. So we're in two wars, you know, when I signed up. And Ian, you signed up probably roughly about the same time then.
February 04, and then graduated in May of that year. So just 4 months in the debt. Go ahead, sorry.
No, not at, I'm listening to you, but I was going to say, I think that's another thing that Hugo Weaving really brought to that performance is the, just the, how hard it is to be a parent of letting your son or daughter make their decisions and not agreeing with them and worrying about the danger and having to navigate that. Like, I mean, that really hit me too. I mean, I've got two little boys and it was like, man, and I mean, he's already gone through it. So I loved that about that performance. Cause I don't think those kind of decisions, it doesn't even have to be military, but like, you know, your kid's going to do something that you think is risky and you're like trying to hold yourself back or like dissuade them. And, you know, it's just like, it comes with the territory, but I thought he did a great job portraying that aspect of it too.
What was that sound it makes?
It's like your insides. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've gone into that one. What I want to do is move from there. So then he does sign up, right? And then he goes to basic training. Another thing I liked with that basic training is every one of the characters had like the most cliche nickname. Exactly. Every one of them, very cliche nickname. And like,
yeah.
And they all represented like,
yep,
some part of the country. You know, it, like I said, this is, yeah, to me a very old timey way of reflecting back on that generation of veteran. And I think, like I said, I think the direction was very intentional on it. And that's why this movie took me, it threw me at first. The first time I watched it, I was thrown. Because I literally sat for like 20 minutes. I was like, was that movie good? Did I like that movie? I just didn't know what I thought. After the second viewing, I full on loved this movie. So I'll say that.
Nice.
But, and then like you said, I lean more towards Ian. I did like Vince Vaughn. But I thought, yeah, he's not Arlie Ermey. Nobody's Gunny, right? Nobody's ever Gunny. But I think he played well to the style that Mel Gibson was pushing for during that. Any standout scenes, maybe from his basic training on through his potential court-martial imprisonment? Aaron?
I did not really enjoy, but just the whole basic training of how they were really trying to like dissuade, they were also trying to dissuade him since he was a conscientious objector, someone who is refusing to use arms. And it's like, why are you here in the military? And you know what? I'll say this about that. Sam Worthington's character. So I think what the first half also did well is really weave in questions, rhetorical questions and themes that also are relevant when you're talking about wars. So like, you know, there's that scene when he's talking to Sam Worthington and he's kind of going over like, I want to, you know, Saturday is my Sabbath and I don't want to bear arms and I came here to be a medic. And he was basically saying like, I can't exactly remember what he says, but Sam Worthington says to him, as he's telling him, Desmond Doss is saying like, I'm here, I will give my life for this team, even though I'm not going to use guns. And Sam Worthington is kind of like, if I can't trust you here, I can't trust you out there. And which is a super valid point when you're bringing people into war. And then Desmond Doss is saying, I will give my life for this war for my team. And he's like, wars aren't won by giving your life. And there was just something about that, that like, I thought that the kind of some of the Sam Worthington and some of the points that he was making didn't feel so like egotistical, like this is the way it has to be. Like, I, those were valid points. Like when you're going into situations like this, like things are not black and white and decisions are not easy and it's not always what you want it to be. And so I really appreciated that aspect of it that made you kind of, for me, sit and think like about the gray areas or about like what is safe and best for the group and things that have to be looked at, you know, and as well as safe for the individual, as safe as they can be. So I appreciated that.
Yeah. And I think to that comment, wars aren't won by giving your life, I think it played into some of the religious overtones in the movie and towards the I refuse to kill. You know, he's saying you have to kill other people. So I think it played really heavily into trying to battle against his belief system as well. Ian, any of those scenes, basic training up through the court-martial?
Yeah, no, thank you, Aaron, for saying conscientious objection, finally. That's the whole point of the movie. And then, like, I didn't even know that was a thing until this movie. And I'm like, what? You can go to basic training, Army Rifleman Company, and then you don't even have to, like, shoot or carry a weapon. So obviously not too many of those guys doing that. And then at the end of the movie, they said he was the first one to receive a Medal of Honor. So I don't know if there were others. Obviously, there could be. But I just thought that whole concept was fascinating. And then I guess because I would be one of the guys who didn't like this guy, you know, he's going to have to like really prove to me that he's valuable if he's not going to carry a gun or not going to try and, you know, do war in war.
Yeah, I think that that's a hard, I think that's a very hard ask to have one of your members of your team not carrying a weapon into something like that. I think you're on point with that, Ian.
I can understand how that's seen as a liability to everybody. And I wonder if the story hadn't turned out the way that it did.
Right.
Would you have that perspective to be like, oh, this is so amazing? Do you know, or does it reinforce the like, look, this was a liability? And again, it's a rhetorical question. So
I think the ending is why, right? Because this is an incredible story.
Yes.
And it's only incredible because he stuck to his laurels. They let him. And I don't think that exists today. I think they'd be like, oh, well, then you just got to go. Like, I don't think there'd be any debate.
Yeah, that's true.
But at that point, it's like, that's a body. We've trained him. He's got skills. We need everybody, you know. Yeah. So it's also different in that regard. But and then with the court martial where his father actually is the one who saves his service, I guess you could say, keeps him in the service, prevents him from being court-martialed. His father, I don't want to say gave in, but realized he had to let his son make his own choices. And I think it also showed that although his father did some very egregiously bad things, he wanted to be a good man. He just didn't know how. So once again, Hugo coming in, like you said, Ian, stealing some of the show with that. So he was that scene stands out for me as well.
I really, really thought that was a great part, how he goes and finds, Hugo Weaving's character goes and finds his old captain, who is now a brigadier general in some like, you know, crazy high level meeting. And he just gets the receptionist to walk him in there. And then he's just like, oh, okay, this guy. Yeah, I obviously owe him like my life and whatever he wants, you know? So I don't know exactly the details to what. So it was a letter saying that Congress says you can conscientiously object. Like, I don't really want to nitpick, but I don't totally understand what that was. Go ahead.
I think it was like, hey, this guy's a general and I'm not close to a general, so I'll do what the general says. that's what I think it boiled down to.
So go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're good. What's up, Ian?
I would just like one day, you know, I want to like find my old captain and just like ask him to do something for me, you know, just because like to that whole situation is just awesome to think about for me.
Yeah, cool. Now I want to move into the actual battle part. You know, they kind of go from there. He's in, they go to Japan. And there they are. They're at Hacksaw Ridge, which is I think I read about it. It's like a 400-foot cliff that there's a rope climbing. I don't want to say climbing rope, like whatever you want to call it, climbing rope that gets you up to the top of it. So you got to get all your men up to the top of it then to move in. But what was really interesting, this movie had this, like I said, kind of melodrama, corny kind of tone. Then the first thing that happens is one of the soldiers moves in real close to look at an American soldier he thinks is dead, who then leans up, screams. Then the other guy screams. And then one of the most violent headshots I've ever seen in a movie, followed by another very violent headshot. And from that point, to me, this movie takes a turn from this kind of old-timey way of acting straight into – it was filmed in the way I saw it, almost like a horror movie. Yeah. All you see is fog, and you don't, like, ever see the bad guys. The violence is extremely gratuitous. And not like where Ryan, the violence was very realistic. This was like gratuitous, almost like a B movie from the 80s, the way the violence was, which is another thing that the first time I watched it just completely threw me for a loop. I was like, what? This is the weirdest violence I've ever seen. I was mentioning a scene to Aaron where one guy picks up the upper torso of another guy and uses it as a shield as he runs towards the enemy shooting, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Because first of all, that'd be like over 100 pounds the guy's trying to lift. First and foremost, right. It wouldn't even be possible. But I want to talk about that. Just that kind of over the top violence that the way Mel Gibson filmed this. And do you guys think it was an effective way to show that? Because to me, it was very Sam Peckinpah-ish, right? Where the violence was used to show the horror of the situation. It was supposed to disgust you. It was supposed to make your stomach churn. I think it was very, very intentional. But also, it gave kind of this, to me, because I don't get squeamish about the violence, especially when it's like that stuff kind of makes me giggle a little, like when a guy's using another man's torso as a shield. Do you guys think that was effective way to do it? And what are your thoughts on that, the way it was shot, Aaron?
Okay. So like the violence, like, again, I'm highly sensitive. I cry for everything. When I saw Saving Private Ryan, I was 16 and I like bounded into the theater, like doo doo doo. And I came out sobbing. Like I could, like the first scene, I was like, I couldn't handle it. It was so bad. I had to like go home and cry with a stuffed animal. Like, but that's how effective it was and how realistic it was. This was like, it wanted to like have that effect, but it was also like Saving Private Ryan meets Army of Darkness. Like it got so ridiculous, like you're saying, where I was like, are skeletons coming out? Are they the ones coming out of the fog to shoot everybody? Like what's happening? But it was super gratuitous, super over the top. Like everyone's legs are gone. They did some very effective gory, grotesque death things in the beginning, like when they were walking up, that was very eerie and very intense. Aspects of like 1917 that I appreciated, which like shows the horrors of war. But then, yeah, it just like launches into super serious, ridiculous violence. So like, I don't know, but when it started looking really fake, it wasn't so bad to me. But the first like 2 minutes of the movie, my husband was like, how's the movie going? I'm like, it's hit my quota for the number of people on fire. He was like, oh, you better up that quota, because it's, buckle up, it's getting way worse. And then I got to it and he was like texting me and he's like, how's the movie? I'm like, it's really good, but there's still way too many people on fire for me.
Yeah. Ian, what were your thoughts? What did you think about the way they did the violence?
Well, I love how we got to compare this to Saving Private Ryan, because that is the gold standard. And
yeah,
you know, where Steven Spielberg uses an upside down Kevlar of dog tags from, you know, soldiers who've been killed, Mel Gibson will show you the dead or the truck with, you know, 20 dead guys laying in it, arms hanging off and stuff. So yeah, extra gratuitous. And then from the beginning, when Desmond Doss hits his brother in the face with a brick, man, I'm like, okay, this movie's going to be, there's going to be some more violence and, you know, gratuitous graphic bad stuff in it. And then even when like that, the kid he saves when he's in somewhere in Virginia, who dead fell on, like that was extra bloody and gory. Exactly. And then, so, yeah. You know, I just felt it coming the whole time, but yes, obviously once they get up the cliff and everything goes wrong. I just felt like that's like Mel Gibson. He might've been building up to this movie, like his whole director career, because, you know, we got Braveheart, several other gory movies that he's acted in. You know, I think he loves blood, like flying blood and body parts flying across the screen.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But I still think I feel like I need to defend that. I think it's intentional. I don't think it's done just for love of it. I feel like there's intent behind it. Now, whether you find the intent effective or not is a different thing. Like I said, I do, because it reminds me very much of like what the Wild Bunch was back in the 60s, right? They're pretty tame by today's standards, but uber violent and graphic for then. And the whole point was, you should be disgusted by this stuff. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't glorify this. You should feel gross. And too much of the time, I think we should look at our service members with an air of respect, but we should not look upon the wars and the toll that wars take with a lighthearted approach. And that's what I think he's trying to get across. And for me, you're right. The Army of Darkness thing, man, you nailed it. Yep. Our skeletons coming out of the fog, but that's right. That's where I'm talking about. It's like a horror movie. Like, what's on the other side? What is it that's actually, what are we facing? And to me, the way he shot it, I kind of felt like we were in the head of a soldier thinking back on what they went through.
Okay. Right?
Not like seeing what they see, thinking back on how they think that battle was like. And that's kind of how I took it. And that's why I thought it worked for me. And like I said, the first time I was like, what is happening? This is the craziest stuff I've ever seen in a war movie that was nominated for Best Picture.
It really goes from like 0 to 100 in 2 seconds. Like, it goes from, yeah, no, I agree. It gets really ridiculous. But to speak to that scene in the beginning, thank you for reminding me, when they do show up and those bodies are being taken out, the 96th, and they're like, that's what's left of them. And the look on those soldiers' faces of what, I thought it was really interesting and impactful how he showed that, and definitely intentional. So you've got all these guys who are fresh, who haven't been in battle yet, and they're ready. They're rip roaring, ready to go. Right? They're gonna kill the Japs and blah blah blah. And you have this group that's coming out. You have their dead. You have the ones that are left, and how battered and bruised and shocked, shell shocked they look. And so you see, like, well, this is what you're coming out looking like after you go up that wall. So I found that more impactful than when they got into the action of the war.
Right, that's fair. Oh, Ian?
Just, I don't really have much of a follow-up. That's a great point. And I love how if it is a recount of, like, someone's view of their you know, dealings in the war. That's a very good observation. If that's what it is, I like it.
And another thing too, to bounce off what Aaron's to see in the bodies, they also ran into the soldiers who were in there, right? I mean, all this stuff was very horror movie-esque. They don't stop. They don't stop fighting, man. You know, they were just like going on and on about this threat that they're about to go attack that these guys have never seen before. So, that was cool. For me, it all, especially the second viewing, it really all worked for me. But then from there, they're under attack. It's going back and forth, and then Sam Worthington's character, I can't remember his name, the captain. He, first of all, Sam Worthington, that was a guy they tried to blow up as a movie star that didn't quite pan out.
I know.
But he's good. He's good. I like the guy.
He's solid. But
he called for fire and cleared everybody off the ridge. And Desmond Doss could have gone down. And, you know, here's where some of the heavier religious overtones of the movie start to come in. He's asking for God to give him a sign to tell him something, and he starts hearing the screams for help, and he kind of nods and he goes, I got it. And instead of going down, he decides he's going to spend the rest of his time that he thinks he has trying to get as many people off of Hacksaw Ridge as possible. And it turns out, you know, the captain did not get as many of his men off of the ridge as he thought. He only had 30 some odd men get off, so he had over 100 plus of his men left up on the ridge, and Desmond Doss was the only one up there doing anything about it. One by one, he goes in, evades the Japanese, grabs the guy, carries him because they're all, you know, suffering disabling injuries, ties a rope around him, lowers him 400 feet down the ridge. So looking this up to see exactly, I was like, how many people did he save? And they don't have an exact number. Mm-hmm. The agreed upon number is 75. Desmond argues he only saved about 50. All the men in his unit argue he saved more like 100.
Oh my gosh.
In one day, lowering. I can't even imagine the physical toll. One, just the rope through his hands. You know,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Hands. But the physical toll of carrying and lowering 75 men in like a day and a half period is unfathomable. Yeah. I mean, I can't. And his nickname, what was Cornstalk? Because he was so skinny. You know, that scene is amazing. And you have to, and I looked everything up. I was like, okay, what was the. The main facts that they changed were like goofy little things about when he got married and, you know, like things not really pertinent to the big point of the story, his Congressional Medal of Honor. And that scene, that whole scene of him doing the rescues and just, please God, just give me one more. And at the end of the movie, Desmond Doss says, the actual Desmond Doss says, every time I came back, I just said. So what are your thoughts on that, where he somehow turns into a literal Superman? We'll start with you, Ian.
You know, that part was – obviously, I didn't miss the point there, but I was probably less interested in that than maybe other aspects of the movie. But, yeah, because I couldn't get over, of course, you know, you got to respect how many times he would go back up and lower people down, but I couldn't get over what Hacksaw Ridge looked like. Like, is that real? You know, I feel like that's part of the movie being corny, you know, like it can't look like that. Nothing can exist like that.
Yeah. And there was some rough green screen in some of those scenes.
You're so aware of the green screen. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But to me, that plays more into the, like, it's a weird thing that I think a kind of cheesy green screen works. But that, to me, plays more into the dreamlike quality of the whole battle scene. I don't know. That's why I was okay with it. It's just because, to me, it's just, because it's over the, right? Part of it, very little of it had a realistic feel or look to it. It was very, very hyper intense. So it worked. It works for me. Those are the exact scenes I told you why I'm like shocked it has an 85% critic rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Those are the things that make me shocked it was up for like serious awards, because I feel like a lot of people that wouldn't work for. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I did, before you go, Aaron, sorry, I did want to say, when he was lowering one of the casualties, and I'm like, is that a Japanese soldier? And then like, you know, a minute later, they're like, yeah, he brought a couple of them down, but of course they didn't survive. You know, who knows what happened. But I just, that's like the peak of Desmond Doss. Like he's going to try and save an enemy soldier. Like he's saving Americans, but he's actually saving someone who's trying to kill him and his friends.
Yeah. He was a man that I don't know if exists anymore of such strong integrity. I don't know if there's too many men of that level of integrity left. I will tell you, my VFW mentor, Mr. Victor Smith, is a man of that high of integrity. Other than that, I don't know too many. I don't know if I know anybody other than him that has that level of integrity. It's amazing that he would do that. Well, from there, some of the things I want to highlight too. So we have all that scene. He saves all those men. He finally gets the last person he's going to save off. He goes down. And that's when there's some really, really, this movie's littered with religious overtones. It's Mel Gibson. And what's interesting to me is I think I felt a lot of his personality through multiple characters in this movie. I think he's a guy that wants to be – he's a very controversial figure nowadays, you know. Little bit of violence in his history, a little bit of bigotry in his history, but also very religious. I think he's a man who does good things as well and wants to be remembered for doing good. So, I mean, I think he's a little bit of Hugo Weaving's character. I think he wants to be a little of that, but littered with the religious overtones throughout. But when he comes down that mountain – and he's walking through the sea of men, and basically everything from that point forward, they are looking at him in a very Christ-like manner. And even the way they start to film certain things he does, you know, they're his disciples at that point in time. Mm-hmm. They don't care. The captain told him, you know, sorry, I judged you, but these men believe in you for how much you believe in what you believe in. And they'll follow you whenever. They didn't even go into the next battle till he was done praying. And then when they go into the next battle, which he was hesitant for, he gets injured. How are they carrying him and lowering him? They're carrying him overhead, arms out, you know, very Christ-like pose as he's being dropped down. Then he's looking up to the sky in a very, you know, reminiscent of a very religious type of view. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting how they kind of morphed how the soldiers started to look at Desmond as a religious figure. And when the movie's really about his integrity and his very, very strong religious views. Any thoughts on that, Aaron?
Yes, of course. I was going to say too, I have, far be it for me not to have thoughts about something. I was also going to mention in the scenes, like where he's saving everybody, like that was when I was like, I am glued to this movie. I love it so much. It was incredible. And especially as like, my background is in nursing, critical care nursing. And like, we have had those shifts where like, it's 12, 15, sometimes 20 hours we've gone where we are just coding people and we are saving people and we are doing hard physical work where you're just like, you're in like a superhuman state. Like you're just doing. And then when you're done, you're like, I'm really tired. You know what I mean? So imagine he tapped into some like superhuman where when you're hearing these people, like you have no choice but to keep going and save them when you are in charge of their life, like you are their lifeline. And I also really appreciated, I really appreciated how they added in there, like when people are starting to look at him afterwards and like be like, I was wrong about you. I judged you. I thought some of the conversations, like with the one guy, how like the real hard guy who like picked up the torso, he was so cold and like shut down and protected. And then they also kind of gave a little backstory on him to be like why he was so like that. And like I feel like what I took away from the religious aspects of this story is there can be a lot of cynicism and jadedness in listening or hearing people that have a lot of talk but don't back it up with integrity and with conviction and with high moral standards. And so here you have someone who is saying all these things like, yeah, right. And then he does all this superhuman feats. And I mean, right, he's saving Japanese soldiers. He was trying to save everybody, which can also sometimes be a liability, but he rescued all these men. So I took it as like, there's something about somebody who has this type of integrity, to your point, attached to a set of religious or cultural or moral beliefs, but is actually doing something for the highest good for other people and serving other people, not serving themselves, if that makes sense.
It does. And everyone can see that, you know, like whether you're a character in the movie or not, I guess. But yeah, I mean, just to like completely overstate it, you know, I guess when you look at a conscientious objector on the surface, it's just weakness. You know, that's what you see. This guy doesn't want to kill anyone. He doesn't want to hurt anyone. He's weak. But then obviously he proves all of that, which you just said. And it's just like, of course, all these guys who thought he was weak now completely changed their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no other choice. there's no other choice. And I was trying to look up some of the accolades this movie received. You know, it was nominated for Best Movie, Best Actor for Andrew Garfield, Best Direction, Mel Gibson won, Sound Mixing and Film Editing. But like I said, to me, this was a very, very odd movie. I wouldn't think this was an Oscar-y movie. Like, I would want it to win an Oscar. I don't feel like it's the stuff the Academy is usually looking at. So I think this is actually kind of an interesting movie that was nominated for Best Picture. And that was in 2017. So that would have been a year after, I'm going to throw this out, I think it's a year after Mad Max Fury Road. So we'd already seen some glimpses of some of the crazy zanier stuff potentially being looked at, but it had quite a few accolades. One thing I do want to go back to Ian on, one thing we normally ask is what did you think about some of the, just the military end of things?
Got it right.
You liked it?
No, Mel Gibson nailed it. I thought, like, you know, that's what every time I see a war movie, I'm grading. Do they get the ranks right? Do they call them by the right, you know, proper name or whatever? And they did. Like, I love the whole, like, don't call me sir, I work for a living. You know, I know that's not in the movie, but it kind of is. Like, what is, Vince Vaughn says something about, you know, you call a useless person sir. Don't call me sir. I'm a like, I love any movie with that in it.
Yeah. It's so, Aaron, enlisted folks like us, versus officers. Officers got college degrees. They're kind of the management, and we're kind of the get stuff done guys. So there's another level of rivalry there. We call officers the dark side, and we're obviously the light side of the light. but yeah, I thought they got the rank and stuff like that. I thought some of the vernacular, the way they talked, I don't think that was really realistic, but I thought it fit the tone of the movie. I don't think it was aiming for that. Like you said, as long as they get the uniforms, the rank, the how they're moving and things like that. Yeah, I think you're right. I think they got that one pretty good. One thing I want to end on, I want to get your guys just kind of final thoughts on it. And then I just want to share a story. I kind of got like a 2 degrees to Kevin Bacon with Desmond Doss. This is kind of interesting. I might be stretching the use of Kevin Bacon there, but Aaron, what are your final thoughts? Do you think people should check this movie out? Do you think it pays respect to the service members who were in some of those battles at the Battle of Hacksaw Ridge?
Oh, definitely, hands down. I think even though I am someone who is super sensitive and, you know, probably in like the 60s would have been like a hippie myself at protests. But like, I think everyone should see war movies for the points you've made, Jay, to remind people of the horrors and not the glory, like glorifying like the horrors of war. Not that I want people to be traumatized, but like it's important to see the impact of these things. And we talked about that on the 1917 podcast. I think people should see this movie because the conviction of a man like Doss is unparalleled. And especially in a time like we're in right now, like these are the kind of stories you need. You need to see someone who's going out there and going like, just give me one more person to help. And that type of inner strength and fortitude. And I think most importantly, this movie does an amazing job showcasing trauma and PTSD and the effects and just kind of the shell shock of being in wars on soldiers. And I think that that's something that can't and shouldn't be ignored for its effect on personal military personnel and also the ripple effect it has in society and their families and everything.
Ian, final thoughts?
Well, I have this movie. It's probably like my 17th favorite war movie, but the fact that it is or was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture and it's a war movie makes it pretty special. You know, I think if you're interested in Academy stuff or war stuff, obviously should check this one out. Or I can't believe you've let it slip through the cracks. And then also if you like blood and gore, you're gonna love this one. But I think it came out in 2016 and it probably doesn't even make my top five just because of all the Marvel stuff. But yeah, it was an extremely moving movie, you know. That's about it.
All right. Well, yeah, I agree with Aaron's sentiment too about just seeing these two, whether it's this one or you know, Saving Private Ryan, obviously, like you said, gold standard, but just seeing any of these so you can feel some sort of connection with it. Nowadays, it feels like more and more society is so separated from the wars that we're in, mm-hmm. that there's a disconnect between that. The population that's going to these places and the population that has no idea about these places. And that growing disconnect, I think also there's some research plays into some of the issues service members have coming back into society. Some of them slide right in, some of them struggle like crazy. And I think, you know, this is a small way to do it, but I do think watching some of these movies and really trying to be empathetic to what these folks are going through, I think is a very powerful thing. But the story I wanted to tell real quick, this last December, this is separate from the movie, but it's about a man who was friends with Desmond Doss. It's a man named Herschel Woody Williams, who is the surviving Medal of Honor recipient from Iwo Jima, the Battle of Iwo Jima.
Wow.
And he was speaking here in Springfield at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in December, and it was amazing. And he's a very slight man, about 5'3", maybe, very small man. But he earned his, I would say, in what would be the complete opposite the way Desmond Doss earned his, and that it was through some very, very extremely violent things that he had to do. But if you don't know this, there is a Congressional Medal of Honor Association that all Medal of Honor recipients are members of. And in fact, a lot of them spend a good chunk or all their lives as a representative member who has earned that medal, being a positive, I don't know, impact player for the military and patriotism and things like that. That's kind of what they do for a living, do speaking sessions, and they have to behave a very, very certain way. And Herschel talked about that. Like, you can't just go let loose, right? People look at you in reverence, and and they'll tell you that that medal that they wear is not for the actions they have. It's for the men that didn't come home. And rephrase that for nowadays, men and women that didn't come home. And that's why they have to show that reverence. And he went into all that, but he took over from Desmond Doss. Desmond Doss was the chaplain of the Congressional Medal of Honor Association. And as he was getting older, Herschel befriended him and took the reins as the chaplain of the association, because if I remember the story correctly, I think Desmond was just losing his hearing and it was just kind of struggling to lead services when they would have them. But Herschel Woody Williams is a story you should all look up. At Iwo Jima, there was a bunch of Japanese pillboxes with machine gun nests in them that they could not – they had a whole load of troops they were trying to move through. They couldn't get past these pillboxes. Herschel Woody Williams took a flamethrower to 7 different pillboxes over the course of 4 hours and cleared a path. What was very interesting, very similar to Doss, he said, I remember the first one, and I don't remember running back and forth and getting the stuff. And he said, I don't know if it's because I'm old or because it was traumatic. He said, but I have no recollection of it. He talked about bullets pinging off the back of the flamethrower that was on his back and off of his helmet. But it was very interesting hearing that man, not the same man, definitely a different approach to how he earned his Medal of Honor. But I thought it was kind of neat that he had that connection with our character and our real life person that was honored in this movie. And I thought he was another guy that I'd try to throw a few words out there about to pay respects to. Look his story up, Herschel Woody Williams. Look up Desmond Doss's story. Both of these guys and anybody that's ever earned that medal, much like you said, Aaron, you just keep going and you don't even know what you're doing. No matter how physically exhausting, mentally draining, traumatic it is, they just kept going and they never stopped. And it's something for us to look at them in reverence and look at those fallen service members in reverence. And just want to end with saying, you know, we got a lot of stuff, funky stuff going on in the world right now. And if you can take a couple minutes out of your day with your families and think of those who never made it back, I think that'd be a real nice thing to do. So thanks for coming on here, guys. Really enjoyed talking about it. I kind of had a rough start with my intro. Forgot to introduce myself, but I had a really good chat with you guys. Thanks. And we'll see you guys on the front row.